Dear Dan, the phone calls have started already, even though snow still covers the ball field. Parents are asking when I'll be starting baseball practice. Opening day of our youth season is 2 months away, but they know I began practicing with you in a gym before Christmas. They want me to work with their sons, too, to give them an edge. It is all so different from how I learned the game. When I was a boy of 8 or 9 living in a small Pennsylvania town, I spent my summer days on a dirt baseball field near my house, standing on the far reaches of the outfield, waiting to shag hard-hit balls that bounded past the fielders and the trees before rolling into the thorn bushes. That was the early 50s, before Little League and other organized sports for kids were formed. That was when older and bigger kids ruled the sandlots. They wore no batting helmets, had no umpires, kept score themselves, and to the younger kids watching, seemed to play all day. They knew my name and were not unkind, but I never played because I was too young, too unskilled. Instead, I stood patiently in the tall grass, stepping into the thorns a few times a day, then proudly winging the ball back to the fielders. When the games finally ended, I'd walk across the road to my house. At 6 o'clock, with 2 hours or more of daylight still remained, my father would come home. We'd eat dinner, then he'd change his shoes and trousers and grab his baseball mitt, the one he'd had since long before the war, and we'd walk back across the road to the now empty diamond. He was nearly 50 then, and he spent 10 hours a day on his feet, but I do not remember him ever complaining when he sank into his catcher's crouch. I would wind up and throw, often bouncing the hard ball against his thighs and chest, or out throwing it beyond his reach where it scuffed along the ground before hitting the backstop. I'd call myself Bobby Shands or Robin Roberts, two Philadelphia pitching stars, and I'd pitch entire games, my father calling out balls and strikes. In 1958, Little League came to town. We played the first games on Memorial Day, and we marched like peacocks in our bright new uniforms through the town, with bands playing and people lining the streets on the way to the field with the names of the local businesses painted on the wooden outfield fence. Parents sat on bleachers down the third baseline, and kids and dogs chased foul balls. My father knew how tightly I held on to the dream of playing professional baseball on those summer evenings, and though he surely knew that would not happen, he never once told me so. He died 6 years before you were born. Late in the winter of 1986, when you were 6 months old, I took you to Winter Haven, Florida, where the Boston Red Sox held their spring training. We were in a crowd just outside the entrance to the field, listening to the great Ted Williams explain hitting theories. He spotted you with a tiny red baseball cap pulled down over your eyes to protect you from the sun, and he reached over and plucked you from my arms and held you aloft. You were not afraid. You laughed and reached out to touch his face. He smiled and announced, "This boy will be a hitter." When you were 3, I videotaped you playing in the house with your aunt and uncle on Thanksgiving. I watched the tape again the other day for the first time in years. You were holding a tiny yellow plastic bat, and your aunt and uncle and I are laughing at your wild, awkward swings as I toss you wiffle balls. Finally, you connect on one, and the ball hurtles toward the camera. You cry out in delight, and the tape shows you hitting one ball after another as we laugh along with you. The following summer, I took you to a ball field just up the road almost every day. I had bought you the smallest aluminum bat I could find, 25 inches long, and I rolled black tape 3 inches from the end to show you where to put your hands. I'd float baseballs to you underhanded, and you'd sail them over my head. One day, your great uncle came to visit from Philadelphia. He was 80 years old, and he sat in our backyard watching you hit. Suddenly, you launched a bullet across the yard, knocking the glasses off his face. When you turned 7, we joined the local youth baseball league together. I signed on to be head coach. I had not seen you play ball with many other kids, but after a few practices, I could see you were a special player. The other parents and coaches did too, and I heard their words of praise. I bought my first book on coaching baseball, my first videotape on hitting. Our play and practices blurred into one, and I was always free with advice. I learned from yet another tape or clinic. I remember going to our ball field one sun-filled Saturday when you were 8. I carried 100 baseballs in a large plastic crate. I had taught you to always step towards the pitcher, but as I pitched, I noticed you were stepping away towards third base. I pointed this out. "I'm not," you said. "Yes," I said, "you are." We argued and grew angry, and I started throwing faster, aiming for the outside corners to show you that when you stepped away, you could not reach my pitches. You threw down the bat, and we drove home in silence. A few days later, I saw that you were no longer stepping away towards third, but we had ruptured something less easily repaired than a hitting flaw. By the time you were 10, you had attended 3 pitching camps, 2 hitting clinics. Professional players showed you techniques that helped them make it to the big leagues. There was always a waiting list to get in. Your team has now won 2 city championships. Your all-star team won the state championship last summer, then played in a tournament against teams from 5 other states. Trophies fill your room. When you are together with friends, you talk about what it will take to win the regional championship and go to the nationals. After one game, an opposing coach came up to you. "I've watched you the whole tournament," he said. "You stick with it. You're going to be a good one." He turned to me and said, "Don't the good ones hit you like a bolt of lightning?" I was proud, though I tried not to show it. I told you about John Matlack, the former All-Star pitcher for the New York Mets and Texas Rangers, who grew up in my hometown. I told you that talent isn't determined by geography. Good players are found wherever they live. During the winter, we throw twice a week in the school gym. And on Saturdays, we drive 20 miles to a set of indoor batting cages where $20 rents a pitching machine and a cage for an hour. A college baseball coach, a part owner of the cages, watches you and offers suggestions. There's a video camera mounted on a tripod nearby to capture your swing, so we bring a tape home and dissect your mechanics. We arrive at the cage early before it gets crowded, and I invite a friend for you, because I'm not sure you will go with just me anymore. I realized the other day, after watching the tape of you at age 3, then watching the tape we made at the batting cage, that I haven't heard you laugh for a long time with a bat in your hands. I have always loved the game. I've always wanted to go to a park with you in the morning before the heat of the day and pitch a crate of balls to you and watch you rifle line drives to the fences. I was surprised when I started writing this and realized that I can't remember the last time you said you wanted to go hit or throw or play catch. It has been me when once it was us. I wanted you to be the boy standing in the sandlot in 1954, wanting to play so much it hurt. But you and your friends never had to want to play. We adults organized the leagues and bought the uniforms and hired the umpires and formed the tournament teams and gave you trophies. Now you are 12, and all that remains is to repeat what you have already done. Anything less than winning a state championship, you will regard as failure. 12 years old. I have pushed aside the countless times we have argued over baseball, a game which once seemed as light as blowing bubbles. Watching the tape we brought home from the batting cage, I see your face is taut, the face of someone who is chewing food he does not enjoy. You had not asked that a college coach stand 3 feet away and analyze your swing. Sports are too hard to play unless they are played with joy. I write this to say to you that I want to start over. I want to put away the instructional tapes and the clinics and the winter talks about summer tournaments. I want to go to a ball field early in the day and forget about finding the perfect form, but instead find delight in putting all your strength and happiness into a swing. I want to watch the ball soar before crashing into the grass and skipping past the trees and into the bushes. And at the end of the morning, we can hunt for the balls, 2 sunburned boys searching for treasure.